Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Midweek Takeaway Budget Special. Today we dive into Rachel Reeves' landmark budget, Labour's first in over 14 years, and a momentous occasion as it's the first ever budget delivered by a female Chancellor. Join us as we break down the key announcements, implications for the economy, and what this budget signals for the future under Labour. Plus, we'll discuss reactions from PMQs and provide expert analysis to unpack the impact on businesses, households and investors alike. So let's get into it. So over to you, Charles, first. I just want to get your thoughts on this historic budget in a few words or a sentence, just an overall kind of feeling or sentiment that you got from it.
A few things. I mean, the first is obviously it was marketed as the budget from hell, and it's not as bad as we thought it would be, right? Yeah. The second is that the largest increase in taxes, £25 billion of the £40 billion, was employers' national insurance. And we had several employee national insurance cuts fairly recently under the last administration. So really, we're just reversing a previous cut rather than being a tax rise. It's just changing, you know, where it's being paid from. And I guess the third thing is that while it's not as bad as we thought it could be, the Chancellor is trying to target growth. If she said investing, didn't she, or something along those lines? And yet we now have the highest tax burden ever.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not quite sure how you can square those two things.
Even post-war numbers, we're talking of all time, right?
I think we're talking, but yeah, I mean, it was post-war before, so it may even be of all time now. Yeah. But I'm not quite sure how you can square you want growth with a tax burden as high as we have, and yet at the same time, the basics are, you know, they remain the same no matter who's in charge. You have an aging population and an economy which is, you know, which requires tech to grow, and we don't attract tech listings. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Kev, what are your thoughts on it? What's the sentiment?
Well, the sentiment is they did exactly what they said they were going to do. As in, they said that they would do X, Y, Z, and they did X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3 as well, didn't they? So, you know, the scenario is that they've taken from the investor class, because that's the only place they can take it. And they have put a pretty large, I would like to know what the percentage of the NHS budget has increased by, but £22.4 billion per year for the next 2 years into the NHS. My question to myself, I suppose, was, can the NHS actually process that much money properly, when all I see from an NHS perspective is that it seems to be that it's a system falling apart? So if you just put more money into it, does that just become the black hole and there's just more money piling in and actually the resources aren't being used properly? So, yeah, I think everybody's paid, or everybody will pay, for this national insurance. I mean, the concept that it's not going to hit a working person is comical, really, because for sure any employee or any employer is going to at least pass some of it on, if not all of it on. You know, I've got to pay this extra cost, so therefore, you know, you're not. Was there any the only thing I thought that there was a lot of talk about before, which I didn't get to the bottom of, was the pension side of things, as in have they put national insurance contributions on pension contributions and things like that? I didn't hear that, so maybe you guys
We'll come on to that in a minute when we break down. So let's talk about things that, obviously, the investing side of things. There was talk of an effective inheritance tax rate changing on effectively, you know, basically investment relief. So holders of AIM shares will now have an effective IHT inheritance tax rate of 20%, which was a better result for the junior market than a complete eradication of the tax benefit that had been sort of touted or maybe leaked to the markets. So we saw shares in stocks quoted on the AIM of their potential inheritance tax relief cut in half in Chancellor Rees' maiden budget. Rees confirmed that inheritance tax chargeable on most AIM shares would now be set at an effective rate of 20%, which is half the potential 40% benefit that would have been available by holding these investments previously. There have been worries that obviously the London's junior market was set for a large sell-off if the relief was removed entirely. So I guess first comments are, Charles, what has the market reaction been on AIM, and what does it really mean going forward for people holding AIM shares?
So the market reaction has been positive. As you can imagine, we're up, the AIM All Share is up roughly 4% at the moment. And also, interestingly, up almost 10% over the past year. And we're kind of effectively, we're back to where we were around the 17th of October, so a couple of weeks ago. So we had this big sell-off, and arguably a sell-off since the election. And now we've had a big spike. Hopefully, we'll now see a rise from sort of 743 points back up to sort of 780-ish, which would be nice. It helps everybody, you know. It's it lifts all the boats. I would say,
I was going to say, no. Is it a better reaction? Is it a better result than you thought as well? This 20% relief.
Well, I think it's 20% relief. I think you're only going to pay inheritance tax of 20% on holdings over £1 million. Is what I understand. Now I believe that's, you know, all your potential AIM holdings. So on an individual level and on a fund level, it's fine. The only question that I will have is where you have a single high net worth investor who might cornerstone a placing in the future, potentially for inheritance tax purposes, whether that you will now find it harder to raise money from those individuals. But overall, it's significantly better than, you know, what the worst case scenario is. And the real risk, I suppose, is that obviously inheritance tax planning and the changes to pensions, which we'll get on to in a minute, these are things that you do over years or if not decades. So the problem is
yeah.
We'll buy AIM shares now. What if they change it in the next 5 years to make the terms worse? And we don't know. But I think pretty good overall.
Yeah, I think the worry was that there was probably anything from 12 to 15% of the AIM market is sitting there on the basis of inheritance tax planning of some description. And if it had been just abolished, then there was no reason to hold more risky assets straight away at all. Now, I think they're going to be in a situation where people, as you said, Charles, first million is not involved in the equation. So above that, you're going to pay 20% inheritance tax instead of 40% inheritance tax. So there's still a significant saving there for people. But as you said, yes, for future investments, it might make people think if it's a large sum of money. But for the existing investments, I don't see a clamour to get out.
No,
and I think that's got to be a positive for the market.
Yeah, I mean, but one of the other things is, again, we'll talk about pensions, but they dragged pensions into inheritance tax now.
That's correct.
Beyond what they were. And therefore, you might find that individuals who are keeping capital in their pensions for inheritance tax planning purposes will now all of a sudden be Googling AIM inheritance tax in order to reduce their inheritance tax liability. Because, for example, let's say you have £2 million that you want to pass on. Your effective rate on the whole £2 million is only going to be 10%, because the first million is 0% and the next million is 20%, right? So you might actually find that it's a boon for capital raising, but we don't actually know. And really, I think the best thing we should do is bring on a couple of high net worth investors and ask them what their thoughts are, because they're the ones who are going to be making these decisions.
But there would be some serious tax implications if you took your £2 million straight out the pension.
Yeah, of course that would be, of course.
So yeah. I don't think it's quite as simple as...
But we're talking about going forward, aren't we? When people are making decisions about whether to put money into pensions or into ISA,
yes. No, you're absolutely 100% right. If you're like, I could put 60,000 into my pension every year, or I can put 60,000 or not 60,000, because it will then be taxable.
But then I think the difference, obviously, the question is with the pensions, I'm not thinking of the words, you're effectively can't access it until you're 57 now. Whereas if you're putting it into just AIM shares in a GIA or in an ISA or whatever, you can take it out whenever you want if the government decides to randomly change the rules. So it's, swings and roundabouts, isn't it? It's not easy to decide what to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. But in general, it seems to be that what we were all having worst fears is not really there in terms of the AIM market.
No, no.
We've got capital gains tax increase from 10 to 18 and from 20 to 24. So not a huge big problem there. I think people will take it on the chin, but in the future, what's it going to mean? It could mean sales and before April, and then subsequently people are going to hold it. But I don't know, what do you
Possibly.
think?
Well, to say the rise from 20 to 24% is not too bad. And really, what they've done is they said, right, it could go up to 45. We're only doing 24, so you'll be fine. I think from the rise from 10 to 18 is almost double. And that is more pernicious to me because these we're talking about people who have maybe filled up their SIPPs and their ISAs and they're finally on the way to building real wealth. And that you're smacking them down with a huge capital gains increase. Whereas going from 20 to 24, it's almost like the people paying the higher tax are being penalized less, which seems unfair. Really, really,
So the other bit of news related to the markets was that the EIS and VCTs. So the Chancellor committed to EIS and VCTs until at least 2035. EIS incentivizes investors to invest in early stage companies, including 30% income tax relief and complete relief on inheritance tax and capital gains tax if held for 3 years. Now, I've got a few mates who are in these VCTs, these venture capital trusts. What do you make of that news? Because I think quite a lot have been selling down or had been a bit fearful that they were going to change the rules on it, Charles.
Well, I mean, there's loss relief as well and various other tax advantages. And, you can be EIS qualifying and be on AIM as well, which, a couple of my clients are. So, if you are an AIM company and you're kind of on the smaller end of the market, it's definitely something to look into as well if you're struggling to raise funds. But, I had a message from a fund manager. Probably, I'll say it anyway. I won't identify him, but he just said, look, carried interest is going up for private equity. Significantly in some cases. Capital gains tax has just gone up as well. You've dragged pensions into inheritance tax. And so everybody else is really going to struggle. And we're going to do really, really well with capital because you've now got this situation where they've increased capital gains tax. And what Kev said, he thinks it's not going to go up. It might go up further. We don't know. But you have certainty with EIS for the next 10 years. Which is enough time, more than enough time to invest and make an exit, that you're going to retain all these tax advantages. It's just going to be wonderful. For that this part of the sector of the market, they're going to make a hell of a lot of money. And they'll I imagine off the back of this budget, there'll be significantly more interest. It is specialist stuff though, and there's generally quite high minimum investment requirements. And the other thing I will say, because I do a fair bit of work with EIS qualifying companies and fund managers, I would say that it's for every kind of 10 decks that I look at that get sent over to me, one is viable and nine will never make any money at all. So you have to be really, really careful, even more so than AIM stocks, with what you're investing in. Because yes, you have these huge tax advantages, but the
They're
flip side
very
is a
high risk.
very, very, very high
Not many
risk.
of them come to fruition, are there?
No. But then that's the same is true of a lot of the stuff down here as well. So.
Okay, let's move on to there's a great article for anyone listening who wants to sort of look at the different, effectively a summary, what is the key points at a glance on the BBC website, BBC News. We'll go through them. So from a personal standpoint, personal taxes. Rates of income tax and NI, national insurance paid by employees and of VAT to remain the same. So, I mean, and that was pretty much in line with what Labour said at the beginning. They would not raise personal taxes. So any comment on that? Pretty much, obviously, we can talk about the stealth tax, Charles, that in fact it's been frozen until, 2028, which is going to drag more people into the higher bands as wage rises over time. What are your thoughts on that stealth tax?
Well, I think the stealth tax, obviously, like 100 grand if you're earning it today is what 50 grand was 20 years ago, right? Roughly. We all kind of expected that the stealth tax would be last to 2030 rather than 2028 before which she would extend it. She's chosen not to. The cynic in me believes she's done this because it'll stop just before the election. Labour will campaign, she'll get in and go, right, hang on, we're extending it now. So, potentially
Cynical.
that's what's going on.
Oh, you pessimists, Charles.
Well, I'm pessimist or political. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? That's what that I would do if I was in her position. So, why wouldn't she? But I think, by and large, it's sort of national insurance being paid by employees. Obviously we had those national insurance cuts, and effectively the burden is just being put back onto the employer, and then the employers is going to put it back on the employees, and nothing really as much changed, in my view. I
So
mean,
your view is that they're holding them now, which is going to obviously generate more tax as because
the tax
as
bands,
wages rise, the taxman that's going to drag potentially pensioners, because we were talking about this before. So the state pension, there is going to be some pensioners now who are going to have to be doing self-assessments and tax returns.
Well, I think by 2028, even the basic state pension will be incorporated into it if it's frozen, and the state pension continues to
But it's
rise.
convenient that she's going to unfreeze that in 2028, as you say. That's the cynic in you, is it?
Yeah, effectively, I mean, that's the idea, isn't it? I mean, it's really tricky. I mean, I don't envy her at all, because you're trying to get growth, which requires money so that you can invest. And the only places you can get money from is either by increasing tax, which hurts growth, or by borrowing money,
Yeah.
which hurts growth.
So if this was the US, Charles, would they just turn on the Fed turn on the printing money machine and just print more money and go into more debt, do you think?
Possibly. Obviously the thing is that you can do that, but we would, Liz Truss actually tried something similar, didn't she? Didn't end up going very well for us. We if you print turn on the money tax and print more money, which the Bank of England could do and could choose to do, the other issue is inflation. We're down to sort of 2% CPI. Doesn't mean it can't surge right back. All the symptoms are there if we're not really careful, so they have to manage it carefully too.
Yeah. Okay. So capital gains, obviously, you just touched on that, Kevin. You yourself touched on it. So there's an increase from 20% to 24% for obviously for the higher rate, and then I think 10 to 18, isn't it, for the lower rate? What do you do? You, this was one that was been or was touted to have been potentially oh my word, it could go to 50% capital gains. I mean, what surely people are going to be happy with this one.
People are going to be really happy. I mean, the problem is, right, is that is it going to go to 24% in this budget, and then next year will it be 26, and the year after 28? And one of the big problems, for example, as a person building up a business asset disposal relief as well. That's going from 10 to 14 to 18 in a couple of years percent. And so you have this situation where somebody thinking about starting a business now or investing in property or whatever it is, they're looking at, an exit in 3 to 5 years' time. Will the capital gains rate, for a higher rate taxpayer be 24% by the time they choose to exit? And the answer is, we don't know. Because originally all of these reports saying, they want to, that my concern is that they're going to try to equivalize capital gains tax with income tax, and this is potentially a first step. And it's like boiling the frog, isn't it? Can it just go up and up and up? And the key test of this will be a year from now. If it doesn't go up again, then it's going to be stuck at 24% and it'll be fine.
Yeah,
But as Kev,
I think the argument is that the reason why it's a 24% and not higher or lower is because effectively within a limited company, you don't have capital gains tax. You have corporation tax, which is a 25%.
very good.
So I feel that 24% is where it's at, and it's not going to change. I
I
mean, they're
think, Kev, I think,
24%
I think,
limit.
Kev, that they've just increased it and brought it in line with, I believe, the residential property capital gains tax, which was at
Yeah,
18 and 24.
but that was the same reason. The reason why they didn't put that over 24% is that you put a house into a limited company and then you don't pay capital gains, you pay corporation tax on it. Where, and the corporation tax has obviously costs involved, but also you can offset more things probably than you can on capital gains tax. So I believe that's why it sat there, and that's why I was pretty confident it wasn't going to go up much more than the 24%
So, I
because of
mean,
the corporation tax scenario, because people can simply just put their assets into a limited company and only pay 25% as opposed to pay corporation tax, capital gains tax on something that they own in their own personal name. So I don't see it changing, to be honest. I don't see it changing. And
unless the corporation tax goes up, that's the only answer then.
well,
That's
no,
a really good point,
they
Kev.
said specifically that corporation tax would be fixed for the lifetime of the parliament. So that was fixed at 25%. So I think she's got no more room to maneuver in this situation, but she probably has got room to maneuver in pensions and in other things. And without doubt, we're going into a phase now where the next two or three budgets, there's going to be more tax raises. I'm sure of it. No matter whether this is the highest tax we've ever paid or not, the system can't work unless they raise more money. Or
So
I should say, Labour's system can't work
labor system,
unless.
yeah, absolutely. Okay, so capital gains tax paid on profits from selling of shares to increase from up to 20% to up to 24%, and rates on additional property sales to stay the same. So what do you make of those numbers on the share side of thing?
Well, I think with additional property, the only thing was they increased the stamp duty, didn't they, by a couple of percent, which doesn't help. And effectively, you have this situation now where the government is trying to get landlords to sell and trying to engineer the housing market to make it easier for first-time buyers to buy those properties. The problem with that, obviously, is that the individuals who are in a position to be first-time buyers with the average deposit of £50,000 in this country are the ones that are already financially advantaged, who would get there anyway. And the renters who are left behind, who can't raise that amount of money, are going to be faced with higher and higher rents because landlords have higher and higher costs and there's fewer and fewer properties available. Which is, it's going to be a disaster in a few years' time, if not
Yeah, and
already.
just to make it clear that obviously that stamp duty surcharge is going to be applicable to be being paid on effectively second home purchases, and it's going to
Immediately,
go up
isn't
from
it?
3% to 5% immediately. So it's not going to affect, as you say, your first time buyers or anything, because there's no changes to stamp duty, but it's on second home purchases.
Yeah, I mean, well, interestingly, the stamp duty for first-time buyers, it was the threshold was 425,000. It's dropping to 300,000. It's unclear whether that's immediately or from April next year. It's still unclear, and I'm trying to find out now. But that they've also made it a bit harder for first-time buyers, especially in the Southeast and London, where if your average property price for first-time buyer is 450,000, you've effectively added a £7,500 cost for first-time buyers. So it's not wonderful on that end of the market either.
I could be wrong, but I think she said that was from midnight tonight. So if the transaction happens tomorrow, then you're going to have to pay it.
What for first-time buyers?
Stamp
Yeah,
duty
I
increase.
yeah I, okay. I can't be, different news outlets are reporting different things, and we're doing this straight after. So a double check that one, guys. This is the other one. Yeah.
We're not 100% sure on that one for sure. Yes, but I mean, ultimately, what have we got? We've got a Labour government that wants to put money into the NHS and into projects that it believes will create growth. But do you think they will create growth?
No. Well, I mean, okay, you put this money into, you were talking about putting money into the NHS, right? Well, so the NHS budget in 2024-25 financial year is around 178 billion. And they're talking, how much more are they putting into the NHS?
22.4 billion, they said.
That's about, off the top of my head, 12,
It's like,
13, call it 12.5% more.
more,
I don't know the
but
maths
yes.
around that. So, you're increasing NHS budget by 12.5%. Are you actually going to get a 12.5% better service? And the answer is overwhelmingly going to be no, because the system itself needs to be reformed massively. But I'm not sure how we're going to get there. What do you think, Kev? Do you think it's going to help the NHS or not?
No, I think it will just go down. It's just going to go down into the depths of whatever they manage to spend and misspend money. There is no doubt it is a Goliath that isn't managed properly, and money is not used effectively in that organization. And I don't know how it can be either. So I'm not trying to sit on my soapbox and say, it should be like this, it should be like that. I don't know how they do it, because it's just something that could eat another 100 million, 100 billion. It could eat another 100 billion, and even then, maybe we don't have the best health service in the world. I mean, it is one of those things that is a literal political hot potato. How do we actually deal with it? How do we fix a system that is fundamentally broken? A system that we all grew up in and said, we have free healthcare and it's great to be able to go to the hospital if you have an accident or whatever. But in the end, when we have a lot of people who are sick who need to be looked after, it's fantastic. But we also have a lot of people who are irresponsible with the health and we still have to look after them. So
Oh,
what
I
do you
wish
do
to.
then?
I don't know. I'll need a new liver in a few years, probably. Drinking too
Exactly.
much, but I think it's the
But
big
by
threat.
that stage, you might be earning too much money and they might not let you use the
Oh no!
NHS.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
Well,
come on.
they'll
I
pay
thought
for
this
it,
was
and
the
then go
new Charles.
private.
I thought Charles, it was the gym going Charles who, was resilient to, infections.
Yeah, it's simple. The water bottle is replaced by a bottle of whiskey, and every mile I run, I take a shot. It's fine. It's good
Ah, yeah, you
balance
did
still.
allude to that, didn't you? You said that the whiskey kept away the kept the bugs away.
Well, I think the
Okay.
genuinely, you got a cold shot of whiskey, it's gone generally. Or if not, and then you can't feel it for a few days. It's good. But look,
Okay,
no, the
so
quality of work suffers.
the last one on personal taxes was the freeze on inheritance tax thresholds extended beyond 2028 to 2030. There was a bit of rumor that Labour may do away with the 7-year gifting rule. So w that wasn't mentioned at all, which is probably a good thing for anybody who's in that process. So just talk us through this freeze on inheritance tax.
Well, I think the 7-year rule moving up to sort of 12 years or so. I think the 7-year rule is madness because you're effectively trying to guess when you're going to die, right? And when they were talking about, well, they're talking about dragging pensions into, inheritance tax. I think that's from 2027. So people have asked me already. I've told you your best policy from tax planning purpose is to die in the next 24 months. It's not advice, but
You've got 18 months to die,
If you
okay?
got if you're in your late 80s, take up, a dangerous sport or like figure out what all the rage is about
Or go
cigarettes.
drinking with Charles on a night out in Exeter.
Or like rob borrow one of Phil's cars, make sure
So
it's insured.
your choice is there's 2 million pounds in your father's pension, right? And you're
Dad,
gonna
you want
have
to
to
go? Dad,
pay
you want to go
eight.
skydiving next week?
That's right. And you're going to have to pay 800 grand of that in inheritance
No,
tax.
but the best thing about it, right? Okay, because you say the best thing, obviously it's quite morbid, but also kind of funny from like, okay, let's say you've got a relative who's kind of like, as we've all had elderly relatives in hospital and they're on the verge and they've hit their late 90s and it's their time to go. They happen to die 1 minute to midnight, then you have no tax liability. And at 12:01, presumably, then you have to pay 40% of your, £2 million.
Slap, slap, slap.
Exactly. A time of death, 12:03. Doctor, I
Doctor.
think it was 11:58. I think your clock was a bit wrong.
Yes.
It's
And
that sort of, it's mad. It's mad.
here's £1,000, doctor. Please take that
You'd be
4 minutes.
wonderful. Morbid
Great.
stuff. But yeah,
Absolutely
but this
morbid.
is the thing,
Okay.
right? Like having cliff edges is never a good idea. But this is
No.
the sort of thing that should be phased in over the
Well,
course of
they're
Parliament.
already saying that back to that stamp duty thing. The news has just lit up with like 130,000 people scramble to get there to push through the house purchase before this increase from 3 to 5% overnight, because it's literally happening now. It's happening from the turn of the clock. So, for sure. All right, let's move on to business taxes. This is quite a big one. Is obviously, as you already mentioned, they're going to claw back a very significant amount from this announcement that the firms will pay the National Insurance on workers' earnings above 5,000 from April, down from £9,100 currently, with the rate increasing from 13.8% to 15%. So this is a big percentage of the clawback, isn't it?
Well, the it was the exemption increased from 5,000 to 10,000, so that very small companies will be actually be better off than they were before. But yeah, it is what it is effectively it's a reversal, as I've said before, of the employee national insurance cut. But the reality is, what annoys me about it is it's not on a payslip. Businesses will feel it, and the big point to understand is that when a business is hiring an employee, what you see on LinkedIn, for example, does not include the employer's national insurance. But when you're taking on somebody full time, you're taking on, you're looking at their total annual cost, and that's just gone up. Now, 1.2% is just not that much, to worry about, but it's cumulative changes. especially like my brother runs a bar in Nailsworth in Gloucestershire, and so you're saying, right, so your employer national insurance has gone up slightly, and business rates might there might be an issue soon. Your minimum wage has increased as well. He pays him above minimum wage, but like everyone will expect more because everything will move up with levels, right? And then obviously we've had this massive inflation, and there's only so much you can increase your prices by before people run into trouble. Now obviously we've said, oh, what we'll do is, the loudest cheer of the day was the alcohol
The
duty,
alcohol, wasn't
right?
it?
Cutting one penny off a pint. And like even down here in Devon, £6 per pint is kind of normal now. So if it's now 5.99, I just feel like that won't make that much difference to
I
hospitality.
would say to anybody cheering at that for the 1p is they just need to go and visit a Wetherspoons where they see pints at £2.10 a pint, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they will be cheering literally every day.
Well, don't worry. I mean, in Westminster, the little pint is like a quid, right? Like, say, they get subsidized alcohol. But I feel, I mean, look, well, I've always felt this anyway, is that, alcohol in supermarkets is very cheap and in pubs is very expensive. It should be the other way around. We should be encouraging people, because pubs, it's not just about the alcohol, it's about the social aspect, right? And we should be encouraging pubs to stay open because they do perform a public service, rather than encouraging people to go to supermarkets and buy alcohol far, far more cheaply and then sit and drink at home. I think it's,
It should be a similar cost. The differential needs to be changed. But the one thing about this is that for anybody with a number of employees, and I think she was talking about more than four employees, so let's say five, six, seven, eight, nine people that you're employing, the difference that you're going to pay because it changes from 9,000 down to 5,000 is £600 a year per employee. Now that's pretty substantial. If you have 100 employees, that's £60,000 a year. In national insurance costs, and that's without, because that's only on 9,000. If they're on an extra amount of money again, then that is quite the take. The take is on the fact that she's changed that threshold from 9,000 down to 5,000. That is going to make a big difference, a huge difference. You're now going to pay 15% on that £4,000.
Yes, and then
And I will argue with you that the employer national insurance is not on your payslip, because when I used to get payslips, it was on my payslip.
was it? Oh, interesting. I mean,
It
I haven't
was
had a
on,
payslip in about 20 years, but yeah.
yeah, it was on my payslip, but I didn't, obviously didn't come off my bottom line, but it showed that employer national insurance was this, because all the systems have to show that. Because that's what has to then be paid to the HMRC.
But
So
yeah,
it's
I
not
mean,
coming out of their pay, but it is
it's
showed, I
coming out
think,
of the labor
almost.
budget, as in the company's labor budget, and then national minimum wage going up significantly as well. So if you have a large number of employees and they're on the, a lot of them on minimum wage in like hospitality or retail, you've got both the increased national insurance and the increased national minimum wage. And then that employee, if they're taking the bus to work and back, it was £4 a day. Now it's £6 a day, and they're paying an extra £500 a year on the bus. So in terms of like at the coal face, it could be quite like drastic, the changes. And yet you do have to remember those national insurance cuts very recently. Really, this is just a reversal of it. But you're right, Kev. I mean, it depends business to business, isn't it?
Okay, the other one is that you had just alluded to there, Charles, is this business rate relief. Reduction in business rate relief, obviously, this could be quite crippling to, potentially high street shops. Which are going to obviously potentially face higher operating costs, pay more in business rates without the previous levels of support. So, what do you think this is going to do? Is the potential risk of more closures and maybe reduced investment on the high street with this cut of relief?
Well, I think pubs are going to suffer, shops are going to suffer. I mean, they're talking about the system being overhauled by 2026, but if you're running a company now, 2 years is too long to wait. I think, we now, we as a family order most things online, right? Because if we go into town, it's £10 for parking, for the day. And then you've got to lug your stuff around. The shops half the time don't have what you want. Town centres aren't particularly pleasant places in a lot of the country anymore as well. And it's just another reason, I guess, because what's going to happen is, businesses will have to put prices up to compensate. And it's just another reason not to go to the center, because you have the situation now where it's going to be okay. Businesses which are already more expensive in the center will put their prices up to compensate for, losing the relief, and then you'll go on Amazon and it'll be cheaper. It's really short-sighted, really bad policy, this particular one.
Absolutely. And then obviously with the main rate of corporation tax, which Kev mentioned, paid by businesses on taxable profits over £250,000 is going to stay the same at 25% until the next election. So we've already covered that one, which is obviously probably better news than they thought. There was anticipation it may change, but it's fixed. Let's have a look at transport. You just alluded to the fact that this is an interesting one, and it will affect working people. I won't say working class people, but potentially pensioners are going to suffer from this one. There was a £2 cap on single bus fares in England, which are now set to rise to £3 from January. And this is another one that was actually leaked out. I think at the beginning of the week they announced this. I watched an interesting article from, I don't know if you know, a guy called Dave Fishwick, who runs the Bank of Dave, which is a businessman from Burnley in Lancashire, and effectively he builds these buses. And they interviewed him, and he said that this is a really, really bad tax that's going to hit the working classes, the people who rely on this infrastructure and using the public transport system. So, what are your thoughts on that removal of the £2 cap?
Well, it's the flippancy with which they say it. They don't understand, right, that people taking the bus, especially to work and from work, you'll go, like, when you say £2 single, you also have to get back from wherever the hell you're going. So really, it's a £4 return, right? And sometimes people are taking multiple buses. But let's just say it's a £4 return from your home to your workplace. That's now going up to £6. So that's an extra £2 a day, 5 days a week, say, 50 weeks a year. It's an extra sort of, it's hundreds and hundreds of pounds more that you're spending on public transport. In terms of the cost savings, yes, you might save a few hundred million, but it keeps the transport network alive. And it's I don't know, I feel like it was one of the few real policies, right, that people could point to and go, yes, this is making a measurable, better difference to my life, right? People that don't usually follow politics. And just scrapping it, or just, making it £3, it just feels really mean, I think. It's like an accountant, right, who doesn't understand the importance of the coffee machine in an office, has decided to take it out to save money, and then it will reduce productivity. It's just bad policy for me. I think it's one of the things where I think, even if it does cost money, it's something worth
It's the
funding.
highest tax increase we've seen. It's a
It's 50
50%
percent. Yeah.
increase. If you look at it like that, regardless of what the amount is, it's on a small amount, but it's still a 50% increase. So a real
And
tax
on working people, and
on
I,
working people.
because the pensioners
Pensioners as
don't,
well.
pensioners, they don't pay for the buses. The pensioners generally, they have a bus pass, right? But the people taking a bus to work and back are the people, generally, either, right, you're in London, but if you're most of the country, you simply can't afford to run a car. The people taking the bus can't afford to run a car, so the people in the worst possible situation, and that extra £10 a week. That's after tax as well, because you're paying for it out of your own pocket. That's an extra sort of free out two hours of work now that they have to find to pay for it, which is just seems really unfair.
Then there was the 5p cut to fuel duty on petrol and diesel, which was due to end in April 2025, has been kept for another year. So I don't think there's many surprises that there was talk of it going up. But I think one of the things that kind of led to this decision, from what I can gather, is the fact that with the geopolitical issues with Israel and Iran, there was talk that if Israel had attacked Iran's infrastructure and the nuclear sites, there would have been a massive increase, or certainly a spike in the oil prices. But that because that hasn't happened, and oil prices have dropped back of late, then this has really helped them to make that decision and not worry. It's almost like something that was inevitable. So, commitment to fund tunnelling work to take the HS2, the high speed rail line, to Euston Station in central London. So that's one that they're kind of committing to fund, which is potentially, it's an interesting one. Commitment to deliver upgrade to Transpennine rail line between York and Manchester, running via Leeds and Huddersfield. And then this was an interesting one. I don't know if you made of this, but the air passenger duty on flights by private jet to go up by 50%. I don't know if you saw the comments, but basically Rachel Reeves took a bit of a jab at Rishi Sunak by referencing his flights to California, and she turned round to him and gave him a smug, you know, suggesting a destination like California, and sort of nodded to Sunak's connection there, and it got a lot of laughter in the Commons. So, what did you make of that?
Well, I think Sunak has said he's gonna stick out the rest of the parliament as an MP, you know, whether you believe him or not. If he was gonna go, I thought he would have gone immediately after losing, and he chose not to. So I think he's kind of, and if you saw him today, full of fire, completely different person to who we knew a few months ago. I think he's going to enjoy just ripping them apart for the next few years. In terms of, you know, the policies that we have there, you know, the fuel duty, you know, fact they'll never raise it because it's politically, it's a hot potato, it's too dangerous. HS2, good. It makes sense for it to go to central London. Otherwise, why are you building the damn thing? And then the upgrade to the Trans-Pennine rail line, it makes a lot of sense. It's economically beneficial. That's something you definitely should be investing in. But you know, air passenger duty on flights by private jet, I mean, mostly it just seems ideological.
Is it one of those diddums moments for
I
you?
just, I mean, it's the same. It's the sort of, but then it's the thing is, right? It's the same as the VAT and private school fees, right? And lots of other things where you're just slowly, you know, pissing off very high net worth individuals. Is that really a good idea? You know, to raise what is probably amounts to a very small amount of tax? Probably not. But you know, we'll see. We'll wait and see. I mean, I don't know how much more money that will raise, but if you just, you know, I imagine you only have to lose three or four people and then you cancel out the investment. So it's again, that's ideology over, you know, practicality. But we've got a lot of that in this budget.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's definitely some ideology, isn't it? I mean, non-doms is another scenario, isn't it? I mean, but the non-doms, there's needs to be more details. Now they've sort of
Yeah,
cancelled
it's very vague,
non-domicile,
isn't it?
but
Well,
saying they're going to do something else instead.
yes, it'll be non-Dom's version two, which will be exactly the same with the same member, with like a different quango of the same people. You know what they've done? They said that we're going to get rid of non-Dom's, but we're going to replace it with something else, which is effectively non-Dom's, but we can say that we've done it because they've done all the maths and they've realised. I mean, what they could do is they could charge non-Dom's more for staying in the UK, and they'd probably pay it, but because that's not politically viable, they don't want to do that. They'd rather just pretend they've got rid of the status. I think a couple of years from
What
now,
does
it'll just be.
replaced by a residence-based scheme, as you say, is that like non-doms version? So he's going to bring back, he's going to bring some form that's in line with, you know, whatever, you know, it's some other form of non-dom status.
It'll be the same
It
thing,
has to be
right?
the same thing. Non-dom means you get taxed on income that is created in the UK and not anywhere else in the world. Isn't that right? So if now they're saying it's going to be based on a resident status, well, what's the difference?
There isn't one. I'm telling you, it'll be exactly the same, you know, minus one or two very minor different things after a lengthy consultation where a lot of very underqualified people get paid a load of
The
money.
notes I've got on it here, it says under the new rules effective from April 25, all UK residents will be taxed on global income after a short initial grace period for new residents. Existing non-doms will have a 2-year transition period to integrate foreign wealth into the UK tax system. Labour's additional reforms will capture foreign assets within the UK inheritance tax framework and eliminate the 50% discount on foreign income brought into the UK in the first year. These changes are expected to generate 12.7 billion in over 5 years, although some critics warn the move could prompt wealthy individuals to relocate. Chancellor Rachel Reeves confirmed the policy change in a budget announcement on the 30th. So, I mean, it seems pretty clear there that they're, you know, what they're doing.
Well,
They ain't gonna.
that's what they say they're doing, but it's 2 years away. And by the time you get there, are they actually going to do it? You
And
know?
I looked, Charles, at some of the numbers on actual numbers of non-registered non-doms, and it was only like 70,000 people in 2022-23, increasing to 79,000. So is this different? Is non-doms a reckon? Is this different than saying, right, I want to set up a business, or I want to go and get residency in Cyprus and live out there for 90 days, but then come over back to the UK for like 168 days? Is this a different thing on residency?
Yeah, you then
Yeah.
no longer a UK resident.
Yeah.
If you only spend 90 days or less in the
So this
UK.
isn't the abolishment of doing away with those sort of like registering as a resident or getting Cyprus residency or Greek or wherever it is. Like you had the Portugal, didn't you? The 10-year rule, which was phased out, and then you had the Spanish golden 10-year rule as well. So this is effectively doing away with an officially registered non-dom tax status.
Yeah, I mean the problem that you have, this is my perspective anyway, is people would just move to Italy. That'll be the destination location. Where what they did very cleverly is they pretty much doubled their what they charge non-doms as a flat rate, because they're and the non-doms didn't leave. And there was an Italian minister actually said last week, if Labour get rid of the non-dom status, everyone would just come to Italy. And if they want to go to the UK, it's an hour and a half on a plane. So I think it's we're just going to if they do actually decide to actually get rid of the non-dom status, and don't replace it with anything similar, then we'll just lose a lot of wealthy people, and we'll deserve to. And that's all that will happen. But I don't think it will. I think they'll just replace it with something else in a couple of years when the purists die down and they realize they can't do it. And we already have, other than China, I think we're losing more millionaires than anywhere else in the world. So, is this really a growth budget? Probably not.
Yeah, I think as my final takeaway is that the UK is not the place to be if you have a lot of wealth, because you are going to get heavily taxed. Do they realise how easy it is for people to move these days? I don't think they do, to be honest. The UK is not blessed with the weather, let's be honest. So you go for other reasons other than that, either family or you have a better quality of life. Well, that's changing as well. I think the better quality of life tends to be in other places. So what are they going to do?
I don't know. I mean, I'll wait for my children to grow old, and then we'll go off to Dubai and we'll stay there for a few years. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've talked enough. Anything else? Any parting statement, Charles, in terms of, just wrapping up?
I would just say, I did an article for IG before the election talking about like markets to watch, and one of the things I highlighted was public sector contractors like Kier Group or the house builders. And and that's kind of paid off. I mean, the house builders are they're up 4 or 5% most of them today off the back of sort of £5 billion of investments being announced. The public sectors have obviously done well, like Kier Group. And then I would say the amount of money that's going into the NHS doesn't have the capacity to expand. The companies like Smith and Nephew, is it Ray and Nephew? I can't remember. Smith and Nephew, but Aspire Healthcare, that's one of them. I think which is a private sector contractor, will do really well. So all of this money going in, have a look at these kind of mid-cap stocks, which will benefit because I think they could do quite well.
Yeah, One Health is one of those that we interviewed the guys, didn't we? One Health about taking on more surgeries, so that's going to do well. I think you can see already that the sort of hydrogen storage stuff is doing well. We've seen Energy Pathways go through the roof in the last few weeks, and did very well after the announcement. When I think they even sort of stated the areas that they're going to be doing that in, so. But I think in general, everyone should take a big sigh of relief and say, well, AIM isn't dead,
It's
So
actually improved.
I think that's a good thing. And actually, if you want to use if you have cash and you want to use AIM to get rid of some of your inheritance tax liability, now it looks like it's assured that it can work. The first million's free of inheritance tax, and then thereafter you get a 50% reduction in inheritance tax. So, that isn't a bad deal. You can put in 10 million quid if you want, and go for
All in one company, one junior resource.
Well,
Cost
then you
figures.
just own the company or go private. It wouldn't be on AIM anymore.
Oh, that is a fascinating question. Can you just put 10 million of cash into a shell for inheritance tax purposes? I'm assuming there must be rules against it, but come on, that's got to be something we've got to discuss another day.
I think the most of this inheritance tax money goes into
The
AIM
funds.
trackers
Yeah,
or
Octopus, etc.
which then spreads it around, obviously. But I think as we focus mainly on resource plays, we've got to look at the whole world in terms of the resource plays. And these assets, you've got gold at all-time highs, you've got copper, you've got silver, you've got tungsten that we've been talking about, we've got titanium dioxide or rutile and graphite. All of these things are going to be required as time goes by. And the AIM market has serious bargains for all of those companies.
Yeah,
Absolutely
it's
bargain
interesting.
territory.
A couple of movers on there. You've mentioned EPP, but I saw a rise in two oil and gas companies. You had Orcadian Energy, who we've spoken to in the past, who had about a 20% rise on the back of it, actually 35% at the time of recording. And then you also had Jersey Oil and Gas, JOG, were up 38 to 40% as well. So it's very interesting to see the rises on the back of that news, you know.
Well, it's the capital allowances, isn't it? I think, which, for a small cap company is huge in the first year of investment. But yeah, good. I think we've done
Okay.
well.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks for listening. And thanks, Charles, for coming on, our resident analyst and investor. And yeah, thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and hit the bell icon for any future notifications, any further episodes.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.